Welcome to Poems for Company. I'm your host, Brian Dillon. In last month's show, titled Where Is My Home?, I featured two poems that may challenge what we think about the concept of home. Elizabeth Bishop's Crusoe in England allowed us to hear the voice of Robinson Crusoe, an old man who has been back in England for many years. He reflected on his home for over a quarter century, the island where he lived alone for most of that time. He did not feel as though his current comfortable life in England compared favorably to his island time with so many goats and hissing turtles. The second poem on last month's show was Karen Carson's The Exiles Club, which depicted expatriates from Belfast now living in Australia. They won't be returning to Belfast, and Crusoe will never return to his island where he washed up so many decades earlier. In both Elizabeth Bishop's and Karen Carson's poems, people were unsettled in their current location. Home was located in the past, visited only through acts of memory. Following the same theme, today's show is titled Where Is My Home? Part 2. We will consider the topic from a variety of angles. Without further introduction, let's launch with a short poem by the Irishman W.B. Yeats, written when he was in his 20s and published in 1890. This is W.B. Yeats' The Lake Isle of Innisfree. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway, or on the pavements gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core. That's W.B. Yeats' The Lake Isle of Innisfree. For Yeats' speaker, home is an imaginary place. It's not his own from the past he returns to in his memory, as Crusoe did, or as the Belfast expatriates now living in Australia did. They conjured a place they were not going to return to. Yeats' speaker conjures a fantasy future dwelling. There, his habits will be simple. He'll be self-reliant, so different from his current urban circumstances, suggested by the line, where he's standing on the roadway or on the pavements gray. I imagine Yeats in London or in Dublin, and longing to be removed from society, dwelling on his own, immersed in natural surroundings. Innisfree is the name of a small island in the west of Ireland, near Sligo, where Yeats spent much of his childhood. Literally, Innisfree means Heather Island. In the poem, he says that in his fantasy zone of a cabin on Innisfree, he would see at noon a purple glow. That would be the reflection of heather in the water. The speaker refers to linnet's wings. That would be finches. This fantasy home, as you might have guessed, is loosely modeled on Thoreau's Walden, a homemade cabin, a small garden, some beekeeping, a far cry from the roadways or pavements gray. There's no mention of sharing this cabin with another person. No mention of neighbors the speaker looks forward to getting to know. On this lake island, the water serves as a buffer against the outside world, creating a protected sanctuary. And there's music in this poem, with the word there repeated 4 times in the opening lines, and alliteration. Glimmer, glow, lake lapping, low, be loud glade, sounds, shore. I'd like you to hear Yeats' poem once more. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There, midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway, or on the pavements gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core. W.B. Yeats, The Lake Isle of Innisfree. Yeats' speaker fantasizes about the modest home he desires. The speaker of our next poem imagines a similar fantasy. I'm going to shift from the Irishman Yeats' late 19th century poem to an early 5th century Chinese poet, Tao Qian. His poem, Moving House, is exactly 12 lines, just like Yeats' poem. Yeats occasionally relied on some language that takes us beyond straightforward description. For example, at the Lake Isle of Innisfree, midnight's all a glimmer and noon a purple glow. And I noted his musical style of phrasing. Tao Qian writes with crisp details and avoids what we might think of as poetic language. There's no effort to dress up his contentment with his new living situation with any metaphors or reliance on rhyme. Yet you might find his short poem very moving. This is Tao Qian's Moving House. My old desire to live in the southern village was not because I had taken a fancy to the house, but I heard it was a place of simple-minded men with whom it were a joy to spend the mornings and evenings. Many years I had longed to settle here. Now at last I have managed to move house. I do not mind if my cottage is rather small, so long as there's room enough for bed and mat. Often and often the neighbors come to see me, and with brave words discuss the things of old. Rare writings we read together and praise. Doubtful meanings we examine together and settle. That's Tao Qian's Moving House. Yeats, in the Lake Isle of Innisfree, never mentions neighbors. His fantasy home is one of isolation. Tao Qian's speaker has settled comfortably in his new house because, as the final lines tell us, he appreciates his neighbors so much. Can we consider the topic of home without taking some consideration of neighbors? The speaker of Tao Qian's poem does not walk down the roadway to meet up with his neighbors. They come to see him. When they meet, this speaker and his neighbors don't express their anxieties about the upcoming election. Instead, they discuss readings they've shared. That sounds emotionally healthy. Let's hear again this 6-sentence, 12-line poem, Tao Qian's Moving House. My old desire to live in the southern village was not because I had taken a fancy to the house, but I heard it was a place of simple-minded men with whom it were a joy to spend the mornings and evenings. Many years I had longed to settle here. Now at last I have managed to move house. I do not mind if my cottage is rather small, so long as there's room enough for bed and mat. Often and often the neighbors come to see me, and with brave words discuss the things of old. Rare writings we read together and praise. Doubtful meanings we examine together and settle. Tao Qian's Moving House. Isn't it curious that the most conventional poem about what home means, at least as I've presented this, is not written by a 21st century American, but a 5th century Chinese man? Try to picture these 5th century Chinese neighbors crowding around a literary text, a scroll, and getting to know one another, as Tao Qian's poem says, by examining it together and settling on the meaning of doubtful passages. We may imagine these interpersonal relationships formed like a spontaneously developed book club. But here, we're in 5th century China. Let's shift to a young woman in our time, in our region, pondering her present. The speaker of this next poem lives in her vehicle and travels and considers how the concept of home might apply to her. Hers is a portable existence, a pick-up-and-move lifestyle. Wherever she parks is home, and always temporary. She's roving, literally homeless by choice, at least according to our conventional views. This is Lynn Sanders' Those Places We Melt Into. I've resolved to stop starting sentences with because and nowhere to say sorry. Even though I am sorry to have spent $18.99 for a mouse deterrent that clicks and flashes in the warm engine compartment. We all want someplace warm and quiet to sleep. It's snowing, did I mention? Maybe you already looked outside, watching it turn the skinny pine shadows white, how it collects in little drifts on the windshield wipers. Where should I park when I return to the city? A new ordinance. No person shall sleep in a parked motor vehicle between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Maybe I could write a letter to my representative, telling these elected men, always men in Montana, that their dream and my dream of home look different. What does it look like out your window? Out mine, this spring flurry fills the gap between trees, hiding the jumbled geographies I drove slowly over. Did you know Gyp comes from gypsy, comes from caravanning, with home and family and food all clinking together, memorialized in a stigma of frugality and bartering? If not a slander, then a romance. I'm a gypsy, a woman with rosewater hair says, simply for leaving one place for another. Already, the white moves into melting, becoming nothing but a horoscope read over breakfast and forgotten as the day turns another hour older. I am not a gypsy, not homeless, not lawless. I am learning home is wherever I soften my guard to sleep. That's Lynn Sanders, Those Places We Melt Into. Eventually, the speaker says, she intends to return to a Montana city, perhaps the larger zone she considers home, though she's concerned that a new ordinance there prohibits sleeping in vehicles. Where should I park when I return to the city? That's one of three questions this poem poses. The other two? It's snowing, did I mention? And what does it look like out your window? Implicitly, we're reminded that living in a vehicle exposes her to the elements rather than secures her from them. It's snowing, did I mention? The other question, what does it look like out your window, invites us to compare our view from home with the speaker's. Out mine, this spring flurry fills the gap between trees, hiding the jumbled geographies I drove slowly over. Another sentence may have sounded like a question when I read it, but it's punctuated as an assertion. It provides information rather than makes an inquiry. It spills over three lines. Did you know gyp comes from gypsy, comes from caravanning, with home and family and food all clinking together, memorialized in a stigma of frugality and bartering? In some cultures, the label gypsy is a slander. Yet, others co-opted it and enhanced it with a romantic sheen, suggestive of the open road and wanderlust. Without criticizing those who self-apply this label, the speaker concludes, it really does not fit her. She's learned to consider the spot where she sleeps her home, even if home, this night, may be hundreds of miles from last night's and tomorrow's home. And the title reinforces this, Those Places We Melt Into. So far, I've steered clear of the quirky opening lines. I've resolved to stop starting sentences with because and nowhere to say sorry, even though I am sorry to have spent $18.99 for a mouse deterrent that clicks and flashes in the warm engine compartment. We all want someplace warm and quiet to sleep. There's no explanation for her self-imposed avoidance of because. Perhaps she senses a tendency to claim logical connections where they don't really exist. Because X happened to me, Z was the result. Relying on cause and effect claims risks simplifying our experiences. And why a prohibition on saying sorry? Especially when the next sentence indicates she feels sorry for purchasing a mouse deterrent placed in her vehicle's engine. Sanders' speaker remains attuned to the changes in weather, and she asserts that her dream of home is not of a fixed residence, but of a mobile restlessness and longing. Let's hear Lynn Sanders' Those Places We Melt Into once more. I've resolved to stop starting sentences with because and nowhere to say sorry, even though I am sorry to have spent $18.99 for a mouse deterrent that clicks and flashes in the warm engine compartment. We all want someplace warm and quiet to sleep. It's snowing, did I mention? Maybe you already looked outside, watching it turn the skinny pine shadows white. How it collects in little drifts on the windshield wipers. Where should I park when I return to the city? A new ordinance. No person shall sleep in a parked motor vehicle between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Maybe I could write a letter to my representative telling these elected men, always men in Montana, that their dream and my dream of home look different. What does it look like out your window? Out mine, this spring flurry fills the gap between trees, hiding the jumbled geographies I drove slowly over. Did you know, Jip comes from gypsy, comes from caravanning, with home and family and food all clinking together, memorialized in a stigma of frugality and bartering. If not a slander, then a romance. I'm a gypsy, a woman with rosewater hair says, simply for leaving one place for another. Already the white moves into melting, becoming nothing but a horoscope, read over breakfast and forgotten as the day turns another hour older. I am not a gypsy, not homeless, not lawless. I am learning home is wherever I soften my guard to sleep. Again, that's Lynn Sanders, Those Places We Melt Into. I'll close this episode, titled Where Is My Home, with a poem depicting a conventional circumstance, a multi-generational family sharing their home for years. Let's hear the poem before I say any more about it. This is Thomas Hardy's 20th century poem, early 20th century poem, During Wind and Rain. They sing their dearest songs, he, she, all of them, yay! Treble and tenor and bass and one to play, with the candles mooning each face. Ah, no, the years, oh, how the sick leaves reel down in throngs. They clear the creeping moss, elders and juniors, eh, making the pathways neat and the gardens gay, and they build a shady seat. Ah, no, the years, see, the white stormbirds wing across. They are blithely breakfasting all, men and maidens, yea, under the summer tree, with a glimpse of the bay, while pet fowl come to the knee. Ah, no, the years, oh, and the rotten rose is ripped from the wall. They change to a high new house, he, she, all of them, eh? Clocks and carpets and chairs on the lawn all day, and brightest things that are theirs. Ah, no, the years, down their carved names the raindrop plows. Thomas Hardy's During Wind and Rain. I suggest that this poem presents a multi-generational family. I admit, though, there's a vagueness about the folks who live in this home. The first and fourth stanzas refer to he, she, all of them. The second says elders and juniors. And the third, men and maidens. We're asked to do much imaginative work here, picturing these folks singing in the evening as candles are mooning or lighting each face, as they clean up the garden, and as they breakfast under the summer tree. Then they move to a high new house. The vagueness must be intentional. Hardy implicitly invites us to picture our own family home, if we have one, and all those whose daily lives unfolded indoors and outdoors at that setting. There's music in this four-stanza poem. The end words in the first and last lines of each stanza rhyme. Songs, throngs, moss, across, all, wall, house, plows. This last one, an off-rhyme. Elsewhere, we hear base, face, neat, seat, and other rhymes. Very musical, yes, but such rhymes do not disguise that the end of each stanza asserts the family's happiness in this home is temporary. Hardy's During Wind and Rain expresses an all things must pass concern in a song-like way. Perhaps that's a method to console us when we realize any happiness we experience at home must be short-lived. The last stanza suggests the family, or what's left of it, is moving and that other family members have died. As the final two lines fatefully note, ah no, the years, down their carved names the raindrop plows, a reference to headstones in the local cemetery. Once again, this is Thomas Hardy's During Wind and Rain. They sing their dearest songs, he, she, all of them, yay, treble and tenor and bass and one to play, with the candles mooning each face. Ah, no, the years, oh, how the sick leaves reel down in throngs. They clear the creeping moss, elders and juniors, ay, making the pathways neat and the garden gay, and they build the shady seat. Ah, no, the years, see, the white storm birds wing across. They are blithely breakfasting all, men and maidens, yay, under the summer tree, with a glimpse of the bay, while pet fowl come to the knee. Ah, no, the years, oh, and the rotten rose is ripped from the wall. They change to a high new house, he, she, all of them, eh? Clocks and carpets and chairs on the lawn all day, and brightest things that are theirs. Ah, no, the years, down their carved names the raindrop plows. Thomas Hardy's During Wind and Rain. What does it look like out your window? Lynn Sanders asks in her poem. Well, I hope you enjoy the view from your home. This episode is titled Where is My Home Part 2. You may listen to the podcast whenever it's most convenient. Start with KMUN.org, click on the podcast tab, and click on Poems for Company, and you will find this and all previous episodes, along with a list of all the poems read on each show. If you have any questions, corrections, suggestions, contact me, Brian Dillon, at feedback@kmun.org. Our theme music is Philip Auberg's Going to the Sun from his CD Live from Montana, available at sweetgrassmusic.com. Thanks for listening to Poems for Company.